This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyi. A death from a sudden cardiac arrest is an abrupt and shocking loss to any family that experiences it, and it causes huge emotional impact. Now, here's an interesting fact. There was a study looking at out-of-hospital cardiac arrests in Malacca, which found that about 20 to 40 cases happened every month back in 2019, but the success rate of performing CPR was only 1%. Now, this points to a very low level of bystander awareness and response during an emergency. So today I'm speaking to Dato' Dr. Alzamani Mohamad Idrus, a consultant emergency physician and council member for the Malaysian Resuscitation Association, or MyRES, and I'd like to find out from him why it's important for more members of the public to learn and to know how to use CPR along with something called AED devices, and why is it so important when it comes to saving lives from sudden cardiac arrest. Dr. Alza, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Firstly, can you tell us a bit more about MyRES, this Malaysian Resuscitation Association? What is it that the association does?
First of all, thank you for having me, for inviting me to join this very nice program to share some of my perspectives in terms of sudden cardiac arrest and what we should do as the a member of the public. So as for the question of Malaysian Association, Resuscitation Association, or MyRES in short, basically it is an association of all societies or organizations involved in promoting CPR in terms of resuscitation. Anyone who just collapses, having the heart stopped. So we came together throughout the nation from the hospital, the universities, and also some societies. So this society exists to promote the awareness for the public and also to update all members so that we would use the latest techniques and spread the latest information and advancements in terms of resuscitation and focusing mainly on sudden cardiac arrest.
All right. So when we hear about somebody suddenly collapsing, I think a lot of us equate it with a heart attack. Now, is that the same thing as a sudden cardiac arrest? Can you give us some background?
Yes, it's a spectrum, actually. When somebody has a heart attack, it means that your heart, which is essentially a ball of muscles receiving circulation or blood that carries oxygen and nutrients to the muscles, they become blocked. So when these blood vessels that carry the nutrients and oxygen become blocked, the muscles do not receive the oxygen. It's like when you stop breathing, and it happens to the heart. So you can imagine when you just stop breathing, even for 10 seconds, you already feel enormous discomfort. It's the same thing with the heart. The heart is really feeling miserable down there because it's not receiving the blood circulation. And for normally, typically, these people would experience severe chest pain. They are sweating and they're feeling nauseous. And if those blocked vessels are not open immediately, the muscles will just die. So that is a heart attack. So at the time when it is blocked, the heart is still pumping. But when we say that there is a cardiac arrest, the heart stops pumping altogether. So that's the difference between a heart attack. So you may get a heart attack first, and then after some time, the heart stops pumping because it's not receiving the oxygen that it needs, the nutrient that it needs. And that's when you can die, because a dead heart or a heart which is not pumping, an arrested heart, would mean that you, the whole body, especially the brain, is not receiving the blood circulation that is supposed to carry the oxygen and nutrient. And when that doesn't happen, in as short as 4 minutes, the brain starts to die. And when the brain dies, you die.
So in 4 short minutes, when your heart stops pumping, you could die.
Yes. And I understand 4 is an important number in Chinese culture.
It's an unlucky number, and this proves it as well.
Yes. So if you don't get the blood to the brain in 4 minutes, your brain starts to die. So it's essentially because of no circulation. So we live, the whole of our body, every cell in the body, we are alive because we receive the supply of oxygen and apart from nutrient carried by the blood. And blood can only get to all the cells in the body from the pumping works of the heart. So you could imagine when the heart stops, there is no blood going to the whole body, and the most important organ that would suffer, that would determine whether you live or die, is the brain. So 4 minutes, it doesn't receive the blood, it doesn't receive the oxygen, the brain starts to die. And if you just leave it by doing nothing, it shall be an assured death. It's a really 4 marks the beginning of death. Just like in Chinese culture, 4 means death.
Yeah. What would cause such a sudden and tragic occurrence in a person? What causes somebody to experience a sudden cardiac arrest?
Usually, most of the cases, more than 95% to even 98%, depending on the countries that you study this, it's due to a heart attack. It's kind of like what is expected. When there is no circulation to the muscle from blocked vessels, the lack of oxygen or the lack of nutrient, mainly oxygen, not received by the muscles, would render the heart, the ball of muscles, not being able to function well. And, the heart is not just the muscle. It also has an electric system that makes it pump rhythmically. So when there is no circulation, no oxygen, it suffers. When it suffers, it's just like it's being choked, you know. With all that, no oxygen, it's not working well. And it causes the heart to be in a state of either it stops completely at standstill, or it becomes in a manner of, like, we call it fibrillation. So it's not pumping, but it fibrillates. So it just dances a bit, you know, but no pumping. So, you know, anything that just dances a bit is not equivalent to pumping. Dancing, yeah, the heart that dances a little bit in fibrillation mode, is not causing effective blood circulation. So all these, from the blocked vessels to the heart that carries the oxygen, and even to the electric system that also requires the supply of this oxygen, causes the heart from pumping, it can become fibrillating, and in the end, you just stop completely.
But are these events that occur immediately, one after another, or are we talking about somebody who had a heart attack some time ago and may actually experience a cardiac arrest later down the road?
It depends on how bad the blocks are. The heart is supplied by the 3 main vessels. So sometimes there's just one block, which is not serious enough to render the heart to the point that it actually stops or becomes, you know, in that fibrillation or deadly fibrillation mode. But for some, the block may be really the major one, you know, and some it caused from one big vessels that branches out. If the block is up there, you know, it's just like having every all other vessels blocked equally.
It's like a major highway that's stuck.
Yes. So if it happens that there is a complete block, you know, then these are the ones that they could get it immediately. Some people, they don't experience much. They just die suddenly. You know, the heart suddenly stops. There are people who are sleeping at night and suddenly it just stops. We talk about more than 95% of people developing this sudden arrest because of the blocked vessels. But there are also other causes. For example, those who had some rhythm problem, some of them were born with rhythm problems. Some young adults or even teenagers also, they have some conducting system in the electrical system that supplies the heart. And when it's faulty, it could get into the same problem of suddenly stopping. There's this condition called Brugada syndrome. It is a genetic thing that happens among young adults that, you know, they a lot of times these young adults, they just die in their sleep. And in some cultures, you know, there was some belief that they were married to ghosts. And these ghosts look for young adult men. But later on, it was found out it was because of this genetic problem that rendered them into this situation. Well, if you take potassium high enough, it will also cause the heart to stop.
All right. But what would lead to somebody taking a lot of potassium?
Oh, usually this happens a lot among those who have renal diseases, kidney diseases. So they are not able to excrete this potassium. And the level will be really high. And when it goes really, really high, the heart just stops. They don't feel anything. And suddenly, because of that high-level potassium, the heart arrests.
Okay. I think what people always want to know is, are there warning signs so that we can know what to look out for so that we can prevent it?
So, when we talk about 95% of patients developing cardiac arrest due to these blocked vessels or heart attack, so we need to know the signs and symptoms of heart attack. Someone who has a heart attack typically will have a really, really severe chest pain. And the characteristic of the chest pain is in the sense that it is compressive. It's as if you have a big rock on your chest. It's compressing you, and for some, it radiates. It goes up to the neck, to the jaw. You could even feel that it goes even to your arm. That is very classic. And usually, it is accompanied by excessive sweating. It's not hot, but you just sweat with the chest pain, and you feel nauseous. So these are very classic signs of heart attack. And you need to go to the hospital, to the emergency department immediately, because you could save the heart. And if you wait much later on, the muscle of the heart starts to die. It's very time sensitive. If you come earlier, then we could give some drugs to open up the blocked vessels. So when you get the highways open, then the blood circulation will be restored and the heart could be saved. The muscles would still be working strong. So it's either using the drug, or if we have the facility and access to the cardiologist, then straight away they could be sent for the angioplasty to be performed. It's about inserting this balloon that would open up, you know, they inflate the balloon at the blocked vessel. It will open up the highway again, and then they will put this mesh of wires to keep it open. So that is about the heart attack. You recognize that, you come straight away to the emergency department, we could help restore that. For some, they are also in danger of having cardiac arrest when they get a heart attack. So that's why you need to go to the hospital as soon as possible. But for some, they may not be lucky. From heart attack, it's a massive heart attack, then the heart just arrests. And when there is a heart death arrest or cardiac arrest, we call it sudden cardiac arrest, these are the ones that you see, they just fall off. They become unconscious. And if you notice someone who's unconscious, if you're working at your office, your friends suddenly become unconscious, you see that they're not breathing. So just by looking someone who is not conscious, not responding, and then you notice there is no movement of the chest at all, it means that this person has cardiac arrest, just by as simple as that. Now, in the past, we taught people to, you know, feel for the pulse and everything. But now we just simplify it. You could know that someone is having a cardiac arrest by looking that, you know, for more than 10 seconds, there's not a single movement of the chest. So that is a sure thing that this person has a sudden cardiac arrest. And you can do something to save this person.
Yeah, because we have that window, that very small window of 4 minutes in order to save the person's life. So let's go for a quick break. It will be less than 4 minutes, and then we will come back and continue to look at what is important. What do we as members of the community need to know so that we can jump into action if something like that does happen? Because it could be so common among our family members, or as Dr. Alza has said, you know, it could happen in the workplace as well. I'm speaking to Dato' Dr. Alzamani Mohamad Idrus, consultant emergency physician and council member of the Malaysian Resuscitation Association. We are discussing sudden cardiac arrest today and more about CPR as well as AED devices to save lives. You're listening to Health and Living BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. Joining me on Zoom today, Dato' Dr. Alzamani Mohamad Idrus, consultant emergency physician. He's also council member of the Malaysian Resuscitation Association, also known as MIRES, an organization dedicated to increasing awareness and knowledge about the use of CPR and, you know, devices such as AEDs to save lives. And, you know, something called sudden cardiac arrest is very common, and more than 95% of this, what you call a cardiac arrest, or where the heart literally just stops beating, a person stops breathing, lose consciousness. More than 95% of this can occur because of blocked vessels that could lead to a heart attack. Another smaller percentage could be due to rhythm problems. It could be a congenital condition that some people are born with. But, you know, we want to focus on what we can do to save lives in the event of a cardiac arrest happening, whether it's at home, among your family members, perhaps in the workplace, or just in a public space. But firstly, Dr. Alza, how severe a problem is sudden cardiac arrest in Malaysia? You know, I quoted, I think it was kind of a small study looking at out-of-hospital cardiac arrests in Malacca, but are there nationwide statistics to show how big a problem this is?
This is a big, this is a real problem. You do see patients collapsing now and then, but actually the data that was shown is about, it has sort of in a few years doubled than before. So the number that you see is around that. When you see that in a month, you see something around up to 40. So this means that such a situation actually occurs from now and then, that necessitates that you and me to have at least the basic things that we could do to ensure that that 4 minutes, within that 4 minutes, you're able to do something that could actually make a difference between life and death. We must not lose hope, and we should have some basic things which are simple that could be done that could make a difference between life and death if we are by the side of that someone. So if you see somebody that suddenly collapses and not breathing, this is an opportunity for you to, apart from calling help in the form of calling 999, whereby an ambulance will be sent to respond, and an ambulance team will come. What you could do is that to really look at the patient, at the person who is currently not conscious. You try to wake him up, he doesn't respond at all, and you just focus your eyes on the chest. And you could look at anyone, you know, you could see that, you know, there is always a constant movement of the rise and fall of the chest. But if it is just a still chest, not moving at all, and, you know, past 10 seconds, nothing, all you need to do is to put your hands together and place them at the center of the chest. We know we have a bone at the center of the chest, that heart area, and just compress it. Compress it really fast. It's about 2 compressions in a second. In a minute, there's 60 seconds. So if you times 2, it's about 120. So 1, 2, 3, 4. And that's all you do while the ambulance arrives. So when you do that, what you are doing is actually you're compressing the thorax. the chest. When you compress it, what you are doing is actually you're compressing the heart, which lies in the middle of that chest. You are actually providing an artificial pumping of the heart. So when you do that, you are ensuring that there is blood going to the brain. You know, it doesn't lapse more than 4 minutes. So when you do that, you are giving this guy a chance of life while the ambulance team arrives. So that is the first thing that you need to do.
How long do you need to do it for?
Okay, first, you do it until the patient wakes up. As long as the patient doesn't breathe again, that means that you should not stop at all. Because once you stop, the circulation to the brain stops. And when that happens, it's as good as dead. So number two, you do it until the ambulance team arrives, which will take some time. And it is advisable because it can be really tiring when you're doing the compression to do it in turns with your friends. Let's say it's in an office. So you do it for 2 minutes. After 2 minutes, you're really, really tired. You know, you need another friend. Just teach it. Come on, put your hands together. Just compress until the ambulance arrives. And then once he's tired, then you change again, which is exactly what we do at the hospital. We take turns. So that is just to keep the blood going to the brain. But there is another thing that you could do is to bring this machine called the automated external defibrillator, or in short, AED, which is actually a small device that could deliver the electric shock to the heart. And remember, during the earlier part of the interview, I mentioned that the heart, before it goes in complete standstill, it would be in a dancing mode, not pumping, dancing mode called fibrillation. So if you have this machine, so the machine arrives while someone's doing the CPR, then you open the machine, you turn it on, the machine will speak to you. The machine will give the instruction. So, open pad, place pad. So you just follow the instruction and the pad has all the diagram where to place it. And once you do that, the machine will read the rhythm, whether you would require an electric shock, sort of to reset it in from this dancing mode to a pumping mode. And you need to do it within 10 minutes. When 1 minute lapses, it's equivalent to 10% drop of chance of survival. So 2 minutes, 20, 3 minutes, 30. By 10 minutes, you've got 100% drop of chance of survival, meaning that it's as good as dead. So that's all you need to do. Do the CPR, compress it, fast, get the machine, place it, and let the machine give you the instruction to press the button or not. So if it is required, then the machine will advise, stand back, press button. So you press the button, and then the machine will say, continue CPR. So you would continue that until ambulance arrives. And if you do this, the chance of survival will be as high as 75%.
So just to revisit again very quickly, first you observe the person very quickly. No chest movements means the person is not breathing. You want to start CPR straight away and probably ask somebody to go and look for this device called the automated external defibrillator, the AED, right? And then I assume when you've turned on the AED, you stop the CPR temporarily to do what the AED instructs you to do?
Correct. So apply the pad and you stand back. The machine will speak to you. It will say, analyzing rhythm, stand back. So we just follow the instruction. All this is something that you could do. But remember, when you see someone unconscious, not breathing, you should get a friend to call 999. So while another person calls the 999, because he's going to answer some questions from the call center personnel, but you will provide all this for the patient. And in fact, the person who calls 999, you know, the call centers are manned by trained people. These can be staff nurses, assistant medical officers. And when you feed the information, even the call center will advise you to start the CPR. The call center, the 999 call center, will even advise you to search for this AED machine if it's around. And the operator would even guide you to do the CPR, would even guide you to apply the pad. So, but remember, you're playing with time here. So we need to act fast. So it's better that you concentrate on the patient. Someone else hold the phone. Or if there's no one else, then put the phone on speaker and then just follow the instructions.
All right. So, you know, I've been to many public buildings, offices, shopping malls. It's so rare to see an AED, to be honest, Dr. Alza. And I think perhaps one of the few places I've seen it is in airports and train stations. Even then, it's one AED in this huge station, locked up in a cabinet. In case of an emergency, you're probably rushing to find the key and things like that. I mean, you know, walk us through what are the gaps in the community when it comes to accessibility to an AED, and where do you think the gaps need to be filled in?
My dream is for everyone to look at the AED as important as a fire extinguisher. So it should be within reach. And if you calculate it, it has to reach the site within 10 minutes. Because as I said to you, we live in time limitations. So currently, there is awareness movement internationally. All airports would have AEDs available. Sometimes these days, when you go to the R&R, you even see an AED machine there. In the past, we noticed all American hotels usually have AEDs at the reception counter. So now the more established hotels would have that. If you fly on the plane, all planes have AEDs, and the stewardesses are all trained to do CPR as well as apply the AED. Some schools, some malls also recently have this machine. Shopping complexes. So if you go to Pavilion, for example, because I had checked this, they have it at the information counter. Usually they have that at the information counter. So these are the gaps that, you know, just imagine you live at your building. At least you should have each building available, if not on every floor, but at least at the main reception counter near the security guard, you have that. At my place, I mean, I live in a condo. My security guard has an AED machine, and I used to train them to do CPR and apply the AED machine. So the gaps are huge, but if everyone chips in, and you know now the cost has come down, you could get an AED anywhere between 5 to 10,000, and it's quite a good investment to have at each building at least. You know, so we know that if there is a need, you know, just go to the reception counter of that building. I mean, each condo, you should have at least one with the security guard. Then you could call the guard and they will come and do that. So I hope every building, you know, all the corporations, because there's some movement. In Penang, many mosques have one in each mosque. When I was doing my attachment in Japan, I remember there was one guy who collapsed near a temple, and then they did CPR, they applied the AED, and then that guy survived. So we live in very dangerous situation.
Yeah.
So if we are clear on that, then we could fill in the gap and we do the right thing to give a chance of life to everyone.
Yeah, I mean, regardless though, 5 to 10,000 is still, I mean, I can't imagine households, for instance, being able to afford one. Like, we could afford a fire extinguisher, but, you know, not necessarily something like an AED. So what happens if we do CPR without an AED, Dr. Alza?
Yeah, it still gives a chance of life to the person. Because remember, as long as you do the CPR nonstop, when there's blood to the brain, there's always a chance of life. But if you stop the CPR, it is no good. Even if you have the AED machine, but you do not do the CPR, it will still be as good as dead because there's no circulation to the brain. So this works in combination and you still need to do that. Now, let's say that you, in the worst case scenario or the normal scenario, whereby there aren't any AEDs nearby, that's why the importance of calling the 999 quickly. So the ambulance team will arrive and they have the AED in the ambulance. So with that in combination with this, but the CPR is the utmost, the most important thing that could give a chance of life.
All right. But do you observe that there is a problem in our community when it comes to being willing to do CPR, Dr. Alza?
Yes. A lot of people just call the 999 and even would even scold the operator and they just say, just send the ambulance, you know. But the 999 personnel would even advise them to do certain things. Get the information, it's not breathing check. You do this. But you know, the 999 centers already press the button. Usually how it works at the center, there's someone who controls the dispatching ambulance next table. So once this person gets the call that, you know, this guy is not breathing, you know, he would already type in the information about the need of the ambulance and the address to the another guy. And this ambulance is already on the way. But before the ambulance arrives, you have a big role that could make a difference between life and death for someone who is not breathing, because that means the heart just stops. So you need to do that. Put your hands together. Make sure the heart is being pumped by you compressing the chest until the ambulance arrives, and be it, no matter how long it takes, even if it takes half an hour, if you do not stop doing that, when the ambulance arrives, there is still a chance of life. Not all situation that the AED shock would be required. Even when you bring the AED machine, it will first analyze for rhythms for which the electric shock aren't necessary. The machine will not advise for the responders to press the button. It will just say continue CPR. So meaning, even if there's no AED machine, we do not know what kind of rhythm this guy in. As long as you do the CPR, there's still a chance of life until the ambulance team arrive and they will attach the AED and they will bring this guy to the hospital.
Mm. Is mouth-to-mouth still done in CPR?
So that's a very good question. First of all, nowadays, we live during the era of the pandemic, whereby everyone wear masks, and it is a real risk when you do mouth-to-mouth breathing. So at this point of time, that is not recommended. You just do a hands on the CPR. In fact, the American Heart Association had been advocating this, that you just do a hands on the CPR, and that would be sufficient because the blood still has some percent of oxygen. And even when you do the compression, there is still air coming in and out. So that's number one. And number two is that when you do hands on the CPR, it will also help to alleviate the fear, because people fear doing the mouth to mouth, but they don't mind doing the chest compression. So that should be done. And number three is that when the ambulance team arrive, they have their devices. They have a bag that could deliver the oxygen and, you know, they compress it. So actually that is still required, but you need the equipment to provide the mouth-to-mouth safely. They would use the bag with the oxygen rather than mouth-to-mouth to deliver the oxygen. So the latest guideline states that how they do it, they compress 30 times and then followed by 2 times of giving the oxygen through the bag. And in fact, to be honest, there are some situations whereby mouth-to-mouth resuscitation is important. For example, in the case of drowning, mouth-to-mouth is still recommended to be given if you are confident. For example, it's your own family member. You could still do mouth-to-mouth and then the chest compression. But in the worst-case scenario, you are not sure, you are worried about the risk, just do hands-only CPR. It will still provide the circulation to the brain and provide a chance of life.
Mm. What do you think we need to do to just make people be more willing to help, right? To change their attitude. As you've explained, CPR is straightforward, and now we've reduced the need for mouth-to-mouth. What can we do to empower the public?
It's like this. the people who collapses could be your family member, could be your office mate. It could be one of your friends at a school reunion. So what would be the difference for you not to do this and for you to just, you know, wait until the ambulance team arrives? If you do it, you could give a chance of life, and everyone would appreciate, regardless of the outcome, you know, because you will have to live with this in your memory, that when he collapsed and he did not breathe, I just stood there and watched and waited until ambulance arrived and did nothing. How would that sound? You know, especially if this is your family member, especially if this is the friend at the office mate who's got a wife and three children at home, you know, especially if the schoolmate that you knew, you played footballs with, but, you know, during that time, you chose not to do anything. As compared to, you know, you do something, regardless of the outcome, you will live with the memory, I've done something. The best thing is that because of what you do, if he suddenly recovers because of what you do, and you would be the savior, and that is really a respectable thing. Nowadays, people knew about this CPR. When you're doing this, people knew it is an act to save life. So you should not be reluctant to do it. If you look like, I don't want to do it, you do it, you do it, you do it. You know, in the end, nobody does anything. But you just stop looking at another person, but you just say, I'll do it. You could assign the roles. Okay, you call 999. He's not breathing. There's no chest movement at all. I'm going to put my hands together and compress this guy's chest. I'm going to get tired in 2 minutes. So you stand by. Okay, I'm going to do this. Okay, how's the calling? What are they saying? The ambulance are coming? Yeah. They're asking me some question. Okay, you just answer the question. So, you know, give all the address info. I'm going to continue to do this. So you could see that there is a something you could do together, and you are the best person. I will tell you, the best person to save someone's life is not the best consultant or specialist in the whole world, but the person you are with at that point of time, whereby you really need that chest compression to make sure that the blood still goes to the brain and not exceeding the 4 minutes that allow the brain to still be functional and alive.
And what you described, right, in a crowd, people are looking at each other and pushing it, you know, you do it, you do it. I can just picture that. That is how a lot of people think. And so I understand there's a campaign called Do More Than Wait. Are you able to share a bit more about it?
Yes. So this is a campaign for everyone to do more than wait. And I think it is self-explanatory. Because you could make a difference between life and death by doing a little bit more than just waiting for the ambulance team to come. So this campaign is in line with what I've explained just now, because we've got a chance of 4 minutes before the brain just shuts down. We've got a chance of about 10 minutes to bring the AED. And if indeed this is a rhythm that requires an electric shock, you will make a difference. You will increase the chance of survival in 75%. And that is a big percentage of a chance of recovery. And you could do that. We are living in 2022 now. We are living with advances of time on information. You could actually learn a lot of things just by watching the YouTube. You could even learn how to apply the AED on YouTube. You could even learn how to do CPR on YouTube. And, you know, you could make a difference. So with doing more than wait, with all this excess of information, we believe that if everyone live with this mantra, you could make a difference. Because right now, the data shows that the percentage of CPR being done for patients having sudden cardiac arrest is less than 1% in Malaysia compared to developed countries, which stands at about 20%. So if we live with this mantra, I believe we can be as good or even better than any developed countries. So you could do more than wait.
So we don't need to have any special training in order to do CPR. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah. Well, ideally, we should be trained. But if you look at it, even if you're trained, you know, you will forget it like next week. But if you live with your mind, someone who collapses, not responding, not breathing more than 10 seconds, all you need to do is put your hands together and pump it at the rate of 2 compressions per second. It's about 120 beats. You know, it's like listening to the song of Staying Alive. If you listen to the song of Staying Alive and you just nod your head, staying alive, staying alive. That beat is equivalent to between 100 to 120, which is actually the rate of the speed of which you're doing that.
A very appropriate song as well.
Yes. So what I'm saying is that even if you're not trained, you do that on the spot. It is something which is doable. It's not like you are conducting an operation or anything. It's just putting your hands together and compressing the chest of someone who is not breathing more than 10 seconds. And even if you're not trained, even if you call 999, the operator will even advise you to follow the instruction to put your hands together to provide that chest compression. Mm. So what I'm saying is that with or without training, you need to do this to give a chance of life. Mm. Well, if you have an opportunity to undergo a proper training, of course it is encouraged. Of course, we would applaud you and want you to go through that. But it's just that everyone is busy these days and it's impossible to get everyone to come to the class, you know, and pay the fees and everything. But we encourage you. But even if you're not, be ready to do more than wait and follow the instruction, at least, of the 999 personnel.
All right. But if people want to get proper CPR training, can you share some resources where they can find out more?
Actually, there are loads of resources. If you type in CPR training on Google Malaysia, you will find lots of centers that offer or provide that. Mm-hmm. There is a training by the National Heart Association of Malaysia that they conduct this from time to time. There are also from others like CERT Academy or some NGOs, even St. John, or, you know, you could just Google and pick a choice at your nearest place to do this. So you could do that. Right. If you have really, really no time at all, at least watch a YouTube video on that.
Absolutely. And it's all out there. I've seen them myself and it's really very easy to follow. If we can follow exercise videos on YouTube, I think you can follow something like this as well. And just to recap, you know, just observe not breathing for at least 10 seconds. Immediately start CPR and call 999 and look for an AED if it's available. Thank you so much, Dr. Alza. This has been a very, very important and enlightening conversation.
Thank you. That's been my pleasure. My last message is do more than wait.
I've been speaking to Dato' Dr. Alzamani Mohamad Idrus, consultant emergency physician and council member of the Malaysian Resuscitation Association, about sudden cardiac arrest and how CPR can save lives. This has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.